walk is of key importance. These people couldn't make it to Karbala this year, but they felt bound to take part in this symbolic march, for they believed by doing this, they would help preserve the legacy of Imam Hussein. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Like the other parts of the Muslim world, Pakistan Shia Muslims observe Arbaeen with traditional reverence and solemnity. Thousands of mourners march in streets of Pakistan to pay tribute to Imam Hussein, the grandson of Holy Prophet Muhammad, who embraced martyrdom in Karbala in southern Iraq some 1400 years ago. The battle was fought between the faithful followers of the third Shia Imam, Hussein bin Ali, and Yazidi forces on the plains outside the modern Iraqi city of Karbala, which is home to Imam's Shrine, a sacred sanctuary for Shia Muslims.
We believe the legacy of Imam Hussein is a timeless source of lessons about humanity and loyalty that exceeded his time and place. The love for Imam is endless and will continue until the end of this world.
The Islamic New Year, started from the month of Muharram, has been observed all over Pakistan with great dedication. Muharram is the month of mourning for the lovers and faithful followers of Imam Hussein.
We're here to pay tribute to Imam Hussein, his family and his companions who sacrificed their lives to save Islam. The mission of Imam Hussein is the mission of truth, peace and justice.
Similar mourning processions and religious gatherings were held in all major cities and towns all across Pakistan with special security arrangements.
The mourners and religious scholars have highlighted the teachings of Imam Hussein and his uprising against Yazid in Karbala. They regard the tragedy of Karbala as the symbol of resistance against oppressors. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Muslims in Nigeria are also marking Arbaeen with a symbolic trek over a long distance. Danjuma Abdullahi reports.
Hundreds of Shia Muslims took to the roads, trekking and chanting to mark 40 days since the anniversary of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and scores of members of his family and his companions in Karbala in present-day Iraq. The trekkers condemned Yazid and his army for the gruesome killing of the third Shia Imam.
We commemorate this Arbaeen in order to show our love and tribute to Imam Hussein and his household and his right companions that sacrificed their life entirely in order to save Islam.
Men, women and children joined millions of other Shia Muslims to participate in the symbolic trek, which was organized by Nigeria's Islamic movement. The trek is held around the globe every year as part of mourning rituals for Imam Hussein. They praise the leadership qualities of Imam Hussein.
He's a leader of justice and humanity. He brought justice and humanity in the world entirely. Why? During the Battle of Karbala, he stand before the oppressors and told them that he stand here not because of his priority, not because of everything, rather to bring justice.
Despite the heavy rain, the marchers trekked for several kilometers and ended their walk here in Suleja.
Prayers were offered here for Imam Hussein, members of his household and his loyal companions who were martyred at the Battle of Karbala. Danjuma Abdullahi, Suleja.
Every year, millions of pilgrims from all over the world take part in the Arbaeen March in Iraq, walking the distance between the holy cities of Najaf and Karbala. In this religious gathering, pilgrims commemorate the third Shia Imam, Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, who is a symbol of love and sacrifice. Hussein and his 72 companions were martyred in the Battle of Karbala in southern Iraq in the 7th century after fighting chivalrously for justice and resisting succumbing to the tyrant of his era. The modern example of Imam Hussein's resilience against oppression is Palestine. On the way of the pilgrims marching to Holy Karbala, a monument incarnating Al-Aqsa Mosque grabs pilgrims' attention. There is a convoy named the Al-Aqsa Corps, which receives thousands of pilgrims from various countries during Arba'in. Al-Aqsa Corps convoy forges a direct link between the oppression inflicted upon Imam Hussein and the one suffered by the Palestinian people in the face of the Zionist regime.
Undoubtedly, the issue of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, and his oppression is similar to the current oppression against the Palestinian nation. This nation is facing organized terrorism, which is led and carried out by Israel, the fundamental enemy of Islam and Muslims. Therefore, we say the plight of Palestinians is very similar to the story of Karbala. If you want to rise to the aid of the Palestinian cause, we must rise from the origins of the movement of Imam Hussein.
What's happening in Palestine today refreshes the memories of what took place around 1400 years ago. The oppression Palestinians are suffering at the hands of Israeli occupying forces is today's version of Imam Hussein's resistance against the second Umayyad caliph, Yazid.
Palestinian people, since a century, are facing a war from the imperialism and Zionism, ethnic cleansing, killing women, children, massacres, many massacres were made in Palestine, in Palestinian villages, and prisoners. 1 million Palestinians went to prison since in the past 30 years. 1 million. So Palestine today is Karbala of today, of this time.
Within the big tent that belongs to Palestinians is an exhibition that displays photos of Palestinian martyrs killed by Israeli forces. This, alongside other organized activities, has attracted the attention of younger generations.
As our leader Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei says, the liberation of Quds will begin from Palestine with God's help. God willing, nothing can hinder us, Iraqis and the Arab and Muslim community in general. We gather around the axis of Hussein, peace being upon him. Today in the Arba'in Walk and in this mawqif, it was shown that Hussein's saga is being honored by our Palestinian brothers. This is a clear reason that depicts the universal aspect of Imam Hussein, showing that he is not specific to a particular sect or religion or group. He's for everyone.
One of the lessons learned from Imam Hussein's revolution is that death with dignity is better than a life with humiliation. And the resistance demonstrated by the brave Palestinian nation in the face of Israeli crimes and oppression is actually similar to that.
Every year during Arba'in, we are reminded that the lovers of justice and liberation from oppression are in the majority. And this mawqif is trying to educate people about the atrocities against the Palestinian people and to teach especially the younger generation what the Palestinian cause is. Mahdi Abbasian, Karbala.
As Europe endures its worst energy crisis in 50 years, the French government has promised state intervention will put caps on electricity and home gas prices, but not until next year. France will limit power and gas price increases for households at 15% in 2023. However, the delay means the caps will only arrive after a few more excruciating months, which are likely to see a further boost to the already skyrocketed prices. Many said the plan was not enough, because 15% still represents a massive and historic increase for the average citizen. 15% is almost three times the current and record rate of inflation, and over 40 times the average monthly increase in wages so far in 2022.
Everything is increasing in prices, and everyone sees that, from the average person to the prime minister. The government says the economic and financial context aren't good, but they have used this reason for years in order to avoid helping the average person. We are worried for this winter.
The government received a lot of criticism for not including any new measures to protect consumers at the petrol pump. A recent poll showed that over 40% of France wants a return of the Yellow Vest movement. They began their still ongoing weekend marches in November 2018 due to the high cost of gasoline. Two-thirds of French gas prices are caused by taxes. Gas taxes are regressive and not progressive because they hurt the poor more than they hurt the wealthy.
We see inflation everywhere, at the supermarket, at the fruit stand, but especially with petrol prices. Transportation is so much more expensive. We're told that we simply have to adapt and cut back, but I think the government could have done more to help us.
France is the rare Western nation which has already in 2022 embraced the socialist-inspired concept of state-enforced price caps. The result has been that France has the lowest inflation rate across the entire European Union this year. The newly announced price caps will cost the state 16 billion euros. That amount is dwarfed by the years of neoliberal and austerity-minded measures which have given hundreds of billions in bailouts, tax breaks, and advantages to the wealthy and corporate classes. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Palestinians have held a national conference to mark 29 years since the signing of the Oslo Accords. Hundreds of people attended the conference, demanding the cancellation of the agreements. In September 1993, the Palestine Liberation Organization, PLO, signed the Oslo Accords with the Israeli regime on the lawn of the White House in Washington, D.C. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas asserted the failure of the Oslo Accords and called on the Palestinian Authority to withdraw its recognition of the Israeli regime.
As we mark the 29th anniversary of the ill-fated Oslo Accords, we call upon the Palestinian Authority to withdraw from the Oslo Accords and to cancel its recognition of the Israeli regime. Today, we also salute the Palestinian resistance, who managed to liberate the Gaza Strip in 2005. Armed resistance is the key to the liberation of all of Palestine.
The Oslo Accords were meant to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, but nearly three decades later, Palestinians consider them as a bad chapter in their history. Attendees slammed the Oslo Accords and expressed their support to resistance against the Israeli regime.
The Zionist enemy will never respect any peace agreements and only understands the language of force. We're here to support armed resistance against the Zionist enemy.
Senior officials attending the conference called on all Palestinians to unite their ranks and adhere to armed resistance against the Israeli occupation.
The Oslo Accords were a stab in the back of the Palestinian people. The Zionist regime is a cancer in the region and it must be removed. All forms of resistance must be used against Zionist forces, and armed resistance is the key to defeat the Zionist occupation.
Observers say the Oslo Accords have only brought calamities to Palestinians and have failed to secure the creation of an independent Palestinian state.
29 years on, Palestinians say that peace accords will not free their land, and it's only armed resistance which will help them regain their rights. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
The Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless Thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless Thou takes it away, and leave no enemy unless Thou repelst him. By means of In the Name of Allah, the Best of the Names. In the Name of Allah, Lord of Earth and Heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is His anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is His good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from Thee, O Patron of Beneficence.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Bombshell Report has the spotlight on major oil companies, but for the wrong reasons. Described as fury, the report revealed that explosive files showed how big oil lied to the public and U.S. Congress about their climate targets. Why does this trend continue, something dating back possibly even decades? Well, in this edition of the Spotlight, we will look at how these big energy companies, while raking in billions of dollars in profits due to high energy prices, continue to dodge and lie about their green responsibilities, all the while endangering the planet even more. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of the Spotlight. Will Maidon joins us, Executive Director of the Climate Action Network International from Beirut. Also joining us is Jody Grage, Vice Chair of the Green Party of Washington State, who joins us from Seattle.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, welcome to you both. Let me first start with you, if I may, Well Maidon, and ask you about this revelation, which is supposed to be shocking, based on a report which described it as I mentioned in the intro, explosive files over these large oil companies. However, it's not that shocking, is it? Because it's a repeated scenario. What's your impression when you heard about this?
Sure. First, let me correct one thing. I've changed my position. I'm not anymore the CEO of Can International. But just to clarify this, no, there's no problem. In relation to the topic, it wasn't a surprise at all. I mean, we've been always getting information from what the fossil fuel industry thinks and what they say. They knew even before the policymakers in the 80s and even before that CO2 causes global warming, and they tried to hide these facts for a long time. So this is not something new for us as climate activists. We've been working on this issue for a long time on policy, and we knew that this is happening. It's the first time that has been exposed in such a way that really is creating ripples. And this is important because the last line of defense against fighting climate change is actually this vested interest. Now, working on climate change is not only good for the environment and saving the planet and future generation, but it's good for the economy. It's economically viable. The technology is there. We can solve the problem with existing technology. The only problem is political will, and what's holding this political will is the vested interest of some individuals and some companies, especially the fossil fuel industry. And that's why these few individuals are holding the whole globe hostage. And this is what we need to deal with to actually finally solve the climate change issue.
Okay, well, let's take a look, Jody Grage, at the fact that you're having the way this has been described, and I'd like to get your impression on it, as to whether they're being kind to them when it says internal documents showed companies attempted to distance themselves. Now, do you think that that's the correct way of describing it when you take a look at the history of these oil companies, which we're going to get into who they are?
Well, I think you only have to look at the example of the tobacco companies that lied for decades about smoking causing cancer. And you need to look at all the pharmaceutical companies that were getting rich from the COVID pandemic. I think that the oil companies are simply part of the ranks of the industries that are intent on making as much short-term profit as possible. And, you know, the world and the people in it and the whole system of the earth as it's developed be damned. So I don't think anyone should be shocked at the continuation of this line of thinking by large industrial complexes.
Okay, let me get your idea, if I may, about what has occurred. Now, based on the reports and how it's been covered, you have a congressional hearing that was held in Washington, D.C. You have an investigation into the role of these companies. And then you have these companies, ExxonMobil, Chevron, Shell, and BP. The House Committee on Oversight and Reform were the ones who did this investigation. And you have the oil companies who testified last year, in which it says that they denied misleading the public. First of all, given the history of these companies, how do you have an investigation into these accusations of which, for sure, they're guilty of, and it takes 1 year before you actually come out with some findings? Now, either these people who are in this investigative committee are trying to portray a different image, or there are strong lobby groups, which these companies do have, lobbying some of these congressmen and women in the U.S. House.
Well, as your other guest said, we have a good example of the tobacco industry. They were able to delay action on tobacco for a long time. And only when those working on the Tobacco Control Convention have been able to include a specific article that prevents the tobacco industry from interfering in tobacco control legislation, when the convention came out and the solution started to happen. And this happened directly when this big scandal came out. Similar to this one, there was this big scandal, and then there was a decision to exclude tobacco industry in putting tobacco control legislation, being involved. Any legislator that gets contacted by the tobacco industry for in relation to tobacco legislation, they have to inform the Tobacco Control Convention Secretariat that they've been contacted to do this and that. So they have to report it. It's illegal for legislators to talk to the tobacco industry in relation to tobacco control. We need something similar for the fossil fuel industry. At the moment, the fossil fuel industry is at the heart of the negotiation. They are in the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. They are talking to legislators. They are talking to leaders. They are talking to everyone about what they want and what they need. They're selling wrong solutions and so on. They need to be outside of conversation because there's a huge conflict of interest. Although Paris was achieved, the Paris Climate Agreement was achieved because there were progressive businesses involved. The business could play a constructive role if they want to. But unfortunately, the fossil fuel, they say they want to do that, but as you can see, they are lying and it's not happening. So this is the problem. I think we need to mirror what happened to the Tobacco Control Convention, to the climate change negotiation, remove them out of the conversation until they prove they really want to solve this problem.
All right. This is the part that we're having, where I'm having a problem with, and I'm hoping that other people actually look at it also and question this, Jody Grage. I mean, come on. Isn't there a way that when you have these big, huge, multi-billion-dollar conglomerates make pledges, first of all, that there's a control of some kind, that there's some kind of organization controlling the emissions that they're emitting, number one? And number two, when they make pledges, don't they have deadlines? Don't they have commitments? Don't they have penalties? Don't they have a game plan and somebody who's overseeing this, which we're not seeing neither happening here? Am I correct to question this?
Well, they don't.
No, this is for Jody Grage. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Well, go ahead, Jody Grage. I'll get to you on that. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jody Grage.
One of the problems is if you're looking at the legislators to do this, it's not going to happen because of the fantastic, ridiculous amount of money that the tobacco industry and the fossil fuel industry and weapons producers and pharmaceutical companies contribute to the legislatures. To think that while all this money comes in, the legislatures are not paying attention to that and are doing what is best for the world as a whole, well, that's at this point a fantasy. So yes, there needs to be legislation. I don't believe it would be easy to get it passed, but why don't we pull in some of these other organizations that are buying the votes to keep doing what they are doing?
Which organizations are buying the folks?
Well, the pharmaceutical companies, the military-industrial complex, big business is doing its very best to keep the legislatures on their side and their holdup in Washington, D.C., and they're paying attention to those people, not to their constituents or the condition of the world as a whole. So I think the example of what's been done with the tobacco industry is a good one to follow. And I certainly think the oil companies should be under that same sort of oversight. But, you know, I think there's further room for further development of that concept.
Indeed.
Over.
Well, when we take a look at what the these oil giants have pledged, basically they've relied on unproven technology, as it was reported, and accounting gimmicks, misleading language, in order for them to hide the reality, is how this was described. And then it goes on to say how they're laughing at the people trying to protect the planet while they knowingly work to destroy it. When we take a look at the unproven technology, what does that mean exactly? Is it along the lines of they are sowing doubts, perhaps, as to whether the green energy is going to work or not in terms of preventing the rise in climate temperature, I guess, or global warming, I should say?
Look, first, I think these companies are doing what's in their best interest and what they're doing. At the end, their pledges are voluntary. No one forced these pledges on them. They went forward and said, these are our pledges. So that's why there's no oversight. It's just them taking this initiative to show that they are progressive, to show that they want to engage in this issue, to keep being involved in these discussions that they're saying that we want to play games, so don't shut us out and so on. They don't want to look bad to the consumer and so on. So that's why they're doing these pledges. They're voluntary. No one can monitoring them. And then they come and say, we're going to solve this by building, let's say, a fossil fuel and attach to it a specific machine that would suck the CO2, you know, carbon capture and storage, and other geoengineering kind of solutions that is unproven technology, some of it really dangerous and scary. So there is a solution that exists, but they're trying to find other solutions that would allow them to continue burning fossil fuels as much as they want. So my thinking is that, you know, you're not going to change them that much. There's vested interest. Only their shareholders maybe can hold them accountable, but reaching that shareholders, we tried and we've worked. A lot of organizations are working on that. It's really hard. In my opinion, they need to be left out of the conversation and work on the demand rather than the supply. If the world adopts 100% renewable energy target, you know, the U.S. did that for the electricity. Most of Europe did that. A lot of more than 150 countries have adopted 100% renewable energy target. You just remove the demand, then the supply has to follow. And we see it in the electrification of transport. You know, this huge, increase or improvement in the electric car happened in the recent years. Such an improvement because of legislation, because of countries said they want to decarbonize their economy, starting with the transport sector and the electricity sector. Uh-huh. So the car industry, when they saw that there's a huge economic opportunity by switching to electric cars, they went for it. Now we talk to the industry, they tell us, you know, we're ready to switch. Just make sure that the government's prepared all the legislation correctly. And, you know, you have charging stations, everything. We are ready to switch. They are not the bottleneck anymore in terms of switching the transport sector. Of course, in countries like Germany, they still have influence. But, you know, even Mercedes, they're producing a car that can go 1,000 kilometers in one charge. You see what others in Japan and other countries, the industry is ready, and we don't see it as a big problem. The fossil fuel industry is still making, you know, their profits. You look at their profits increasing rather than decreasing from fossil fuels. They don't see the same kind of profit from renewable energy. The minute the economics work for renewable energy more, and this is what the governments can do. The minute governments make more profit from renewable energy, these companies have no choice but to switch.
All right. I'm going to ask you this question before we move on to what is really at the heart of the matter here, at least in terms of the lens of that I'm looking at. Jody Graich, it appears when you look at the statements made there by the Oversight Committee, the person that was presenting it, there was a huge billboard behind her of which it said, profits for ExxonMobil, so many billions of dollars. In the case of ExxonMobil, it came in at $17.9 billion for 3 months. BP, roughly around the same, a little more, a little less. Do you think that this is being raised at this point because they are seeing how these big oil and gas companies making so much money while the rest of the citizens of, for example, in the U.S. may be suffering because of a result of high energy prices, that they want to cap the amount of profits that these companies make or tax them maybe even more because there's an energy crunch and crisis, not only just in the U.S., but pretty much around the world?
Well, there are some considerations that should be mentioned here. One is that the technology that is being developed also has its costs. It has environmental costs from mining. It uses rare materials. The amount of the expense of the materials used and the process used to develop these things is not inconsequential. So part of the conundrum here is if you feel a need to make sure that the companies who are doing the next phase of things beyond the oil industry also continue to make massive quantities of money, the whole solution to climate change then becomes dependent on letting the next technology thing make all this money. But you have limits. The Earth has limits, which we are exceeding as far as population, consumption, the availability of raw materials. So it is not reasonable to think that the only carrot, the only way we have of making companies do the next thing is to enable them to make obscene amounts of money while many people have nothing, just like the oil and gas industry has done. We need to refocus things on a longer term basis, and we need to take away money as the only incentive. Some shareholder groups are trying to do this without an awful lot of success, but we're in a recalibrating point that has to do with the carrying capacity of the Earth.
Well, first of all, when you say that, the recalibrating point, that point was reached on many different COP climate conferences, et cetera. We're going to get to a couple of those conferences, but I'd like to do a history check with you, if I may, and really put the focus on the integrity, the ethics that are involved here, or lack of it, should I say. And the prime example that comes up with is what was called the climate deception dossiers. I don't know if you remember that, going back, some more than decades ago, where the whole purpose of these big oil companies was to deceive people by sowing doubt whether climate change, does it really exist? Is the temperature of the globe, of the Earth, really rising? And that was their whole plan, spending millions of dollars to basically promote misinformation. Tell us if we're looking at that to have just prevailed throughout all the years, even now when we hear a report like this come out in the news.
Yeah, again, I said we weren't surprised because we've been seeing it for a long period of time, and actually the fossil fuel industry did succeed they did succeed in delaying action on the international level, especially, and in the U.S. for a long period of time. In the late 80s, early 90s, the coal industry, U.S. coal industry, if I remember correctly, have trained the Saudi Arabia negotiating team to negotiate in the climate change negotiations to make sure, because you know they had similar interests, which is the fossil fuel economy. But we were able to shift that. Yes, it took us a lot of time. It made us waste a lot of valuable time, and we are now at a stage where we want to do the transformational change faster than before. And you know, in relation to solution, yes, everything has impact. Even us as civil society can have impact in our work. Of course, there should be regulations. It's the regulations from the governments that's going to make the companies adopt correct solutions that don't harm people and planet. We cannot rely on morality. Morality is very subjective. It goes down to the individual. It's not a company. At the end, individuals run these corporations. I've seen some businesses, big businesses, that are more progressive and more inspiring than some civil society organization. So it's just individuals. But just rely on morality and making sure that everyone has this kind of ideology and kind of the way, like, if you want to wait until the planet or the globe, the population on the globe, has this kind of awareness and acts in good faith to save others and think about others, we're not gonna, you know, save the planet or the civilization on this planet. What definitely we need is to find solutions that preserve the planet within its boundaries. We believe there are two limits. There is a smaller limit, mm-hmm. which is related to the limit of what you provide individuals in a welfare state, you know, basic healthcare, food, shelter, and so on. And then there's the outer limit, which is how much we can use the natural resources. And many studies have shown that you can live within existing planetary resources in the same kind of quality of life, in the same kind of population that exists on the planet, and it would work. The problem is some individuals are taking much more than others, and this is where the problem is. But it's also in relation to regulations by the government. To give an example, very concrete examples, just the subsidies that the fossil fuel industry receive, if they just remove that, it can tip the scales towards renewable energy. And we're not saying about making billions, not like trying to make the same companies make the same amount of money they're making right now. But what we mean is like
that's a good point.
The shift in what is good for the planet and the economy has to shift.
Sure, that's a very good point. I'm looking at the clock. We're really running short of time here. Let's move away from these big oil companies, Jody Grage, and look at other companies, other businesses. And this particular headline, which I'm going to forge into another piece of news or concept, I should say, came out in 2019, how 700 companies, which included companies like Facebook and Amazon, were accused of concealing their environmental impact. Basically, this leads to the whole notion of greenwashing, okay, where there's false pledges made towards how they are moving towards that in the way that their business products work. When you have this many companies of this stature that are basically lying about the fact that they're going green in one way or another, how can there be any hope then?
Well, it's pretty hard to see, all right, because the company's basic thrust is to make more money. So I think legislation and oversight has to do with it. I also think that people themselves and organizations can really look at the fact that too many people consuming too much stuff is not going to do it. There must be a better balance between of consumption and population. Climate change is of course affecting the poorest,
okay,
the most, and
right,
that isn't sustainable.
Sure, I know that's a topic for another program. Fortunately, we're first out of time. Let me thank our guest there, Jody Grage, was talking vice chair of the Green Party of Washington State. Well, Maidan, what's the name of the company that you work with or work for?
I know I'm a consultant for governments and international organizations, climate policy.
Excellent. Very nice. Who spoke to us from Beirut. Thank you for that. I apologize for that mistake. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mika Vatari and the team, it's goodbye.
www.parstoday.com/en. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Eating breakfast in the nature really hits the spot. What a delicious jam. Different taste. After drinking a cup of Iranian tea, I fed up. Have the necessary stuff for an exciting adventure. And here's my backpack. Oh, listen. Very sweet. Here we have the birds singing, the beautiful nature, and a new adventure in Iran. Yes, I'm in Shirabad Park in Golestan province, and our today's destination is Shirabad Waterfall. Stay with me. Shirabad Waterfall is in Alborz mountain range in Golestan province, northern Iran. Shirabad Waterfall is in the form of a stairway cascade and includes 12 large and small waterfalls. Its largest waterfall is 35 meters high. There is a cave on top of the waterfalls. Water flows inside the cave, which is a habitat for wildlife species such as the Iranian salamander. A large part of the cave is in absolute darkness. There is a spring at the end of the cave. There are various trees and shrubs outside the cave, such as hornbeam, maple, alder, and moss. Shirabad Waterfall has been registered on the National Heritage List. What a fresh air! Oh, pure oxygen! I am in the forest. There are trees and different types of herbs here. Oh, I love these ferns. Look at them. Shirabad has a very different flora. And over there, you can see maple and alder trees. Oh no! I was about to put my feet on these colorful mushrooms. You know, I'm very careful. I watch my footsteps. You should walk on a well-trodden path so that the nature will be protected. After passing the rocks, I'll see the waterfall. Now, here it is, the first Shirabad waterfall. However, it's refreshing. The depth of these waterfalls are different. Some of them are very deep and some others are shallow. Oh no, it's showering. Oh God. So, let me take shelter in a cave above here. So, a change in the plan. I am now in a cave on the way to the second waterfall. It is called Shirabad Cave. I am here. Thank God I've brought my headlights. Oh, sorry, bats. I disturb you. of the cave gets narrower and shorter as you step forward. It's exciting. At the end of the cave, there is a spring. But unfortunately, I can't continue caving because I have to come back to my residence before night. I wish I had time for more exploration. The rain stopped. Here we have clean air and piles of oxygen. Oh, it's dreamy here. And the only thing which is needed now is a cup of Iranian tea.
Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. A diverse range of programs. Youth, spirituality, culture, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.